Unveiled Mysteries. Chapter 1. Meeting the Master. Mount Shasta stood out boldly against the western sky, surrounded at its base by a growth of pine and fir trees that made it look like a jewel of diamond-shining whiteness held in a filigree setting of green. Its snow-covered peaks glistened and changed color from moment to moment as the shadows lengthened in the sun's descent toward the horizon. Rumor said there was a group of men, divine men, in fact, called the Brotherhood of Mount Shasta, who formed a branch of the Great White Lodge, and that this focus from very ancient times had continued unbroken down to the present day. I had been sent on government business to a little town situated at the foot of the mountain, and while thus engaged, occupied my leisure time trying to unravel this rumor concerning the Brotherhood. I knew, through travels in the Far East, that most rumors, myths, and legends have, somewhere as their origin, a deep underlying truth that usually remains unrecognized by all but those who are real students of life. I fell in love with Shasta, and each morning, almost involuntarily, saluted the spirit of the mountain and the members of the order. I sensed something very unusual about the entire locality, and in the light of the experiences that followed, I do not wonder that some of them cast their shadows before. Long hikes on the trail had become my habit whenever I wanted to think things out alone or make decisions of serious import. Here, on this great giant of nature, I found recreation, inspiration, and peace that soothed my soul and invigorated mind and body. I had planned such a hike for pleasure, as I thought, to spend some time deep in the heart of the mountain, when the following experience entered my life, to change it so completely that I could almost believe I were on another planet, but for my return to the usual routine in which I had been engaged for months. The morning in question, I started out at daybreak, deciding to follow where fancy led, and in a vague sort of way asked God to direct my path. By noon, I had climbed high up on the side of the mountain, where the view to the south was beautiful as a dream. As the day advanced, it grew very warm, and I stopped frequently to rest and to enjoy to the full the remarkable stretch of country around the McLeod River, valley, and town. It came time for lunch, and I sought a mountain spring for clear, cold water. Cup in hand, I bent down to fill it, when an electrical current passed through my body from head to foot. I looked around, and directly behind me stood a young man who, at first glance, seemed to be someone on a hike like myself. I looked more closely, and realized immediately that he was no ordinary person. As this thought passed through my mind, he smiled, and addressed me, saying, "My brother, if you will hand me your cup, I will give you a much more refreshing drink than spring water." I obeyed, and instantly the cup was filled with a creamy liquid. Handing it back to me, he said, "Drink it." I did so, and must have looked my astonishment. While the taste was delicious, the electrical, vivifying effect in my mind and body made me gasp with surprise. I did not see him put anything into the cup, and I wondered what was happening. "That which you drank," he explained, "comes directly from the universal supply, pure and vivifying as life itself. In fact, it is life, omnipresent life, for it exists everywhere about us. It is subject to our conscious control and direction, willingly obedient, when we love enough. Because all the universe obeys the behest of love. Whatsoever I desire manifests itself when I command in love. I held out the cup, and that which I desired for you appeared. See, I have but to hold out my hand, and if I wish to use gold, gold is here. Instantly there lay in his palm a disc about the size of a $10 gold piece. Again he continued, I see within you a certain inner understanding of the great law, but you are not outwardly aware of it enough to produce that which you desire direct from the omnipresent universal supply. You have desired to see something of this kind so intensely, so honestly, and so determinedly, it could no longer be withheld from you. However, precipitation is one of the least important activities of the great truth of being. If your desire had not been free from selfishness and the fascination of phenomena, such an experience could not have come to you. When leaving home this morning, you thought you were coming on a hike, that is, so far as the outer activity of your mind was concerned. In the deeper, larger sense, you were really following the urge of your inner God-self that led to the person, place, and condition wherein your most intense desire could be fulfilled. The truth of life is, you cannot desire that which is not possible of manifestation somewhere in the universe. The more intense the feeling within the desire, the more quickly it will be attained. However, if one be foolish enough to desire something that will injure another of God's children, or any other part of his creation, then that person will pay the penalty in discord and failure somewhere in his own life's experience. It is very important to realize fully that God's intent for every one of his children is abundance of every good and perfect thing. He created perfection and endowed his children with exactly the same power. They can create and maintain perfection also, and express God's dominion over the earth and all that is therein. Mankind was originally created in the image and likeness of God. The only reason all do not manifest dominion is because they do not use their divine authority. That with which each individual is endowed and by which he is intended to govern his world. Thus, they are not obeying the law of love by pouring out peace and blessing to all creation. This comes about through their failure to accept and acknowledge themselves as temples of the Most High Living God, and to hold this acknowledgement with eternal recognition. Humanity, in its present seeming limitation of time, space, and activity, is in the same condition a person in need would be to whom someone held out a handful of money. If the needy one did not step forward and accept the money held out to him, how in the world could he ever have the benefit which it could bring? The mass of mankind is exactly in this state of consciousness today, and will continue in it until they accept the God within their hearts as the owner, giver, and doer of all the good that has ever come into their lives and world. The personal self of every individual must acknowledge completely and unconditionally that the human or outer activity of consciousness has absolutely nothing of its own. Even the energy by which one recognizes the great God within is radiated into the personal self by the great God self. Love and praise of the great God self within and the attention maintained focused upon truth, health, freedom, peace, supply, or any other thing that you may desire for right use, persistently held in your conscious thought and feeling, will bring them into your use and world as surely as there is a great law of magnetic attraction in the universe. The eternal law of life is what you think and feel you bring into form. Where your thought is, there you are, for you are your consciousness, and what you meditate upon, you become. When one allows his mind to dwell upon thoughts of hate, condemnation, lust, envy, jealousy, criticism, fear, doubt, or suspicion, and allows these feelings of irritation to generate within him, he will certainly have discord, failure, and disaster in his mind, body, and world. As long as he persists in allowing his attention to be held by such thoughts, whether they be about nations, persons, places, conditions, or things, he is absorbing those activities into the substance of his mind, his body, and his affairs. In fact, he is compelling, forcing them into his experience. All these discordant activities reach the individual and his world through his thought and feeling. Feeling often flashes before one is aware of the thought in the outer consciousness, which he might use to control it. And this kind of experience should teach him how great is the energy within his many creations, which has accumulated through habit. The feeling activity of life is the most unguarded point of human consciousness. It is the accumulative energy by which thoughts are propelled into the atomic substance, and thus thoughts become things. I tell you, the need of guarding the feeling cannot be emphasized too strongly, for control of the emotions plays the most important part of anything in life, in maintaining balance in the mind, health in the body, success and accomplishment in the affairs and world of the personal self of every individual. Thoughts can never become things until they are clothed with feeling. The Holy Ghost, or Holy Spirit, is the feeling side of life, God, the activity of divine love, or the mother expression of deity. This is why the sin against the Holy Ghost is referred to as that which brings such great distress, because any discord in the feeling breaks the law of love, which is the law of balance, harmony, and perfection. The greatest crime in the universe against the law of love is mankind's almost ceaseless sending forth of every kind of irritable and destructive feeling. One day the race will come to realize and recognize that the sinister destructive forces manifesting on this earth and in its atmosphere, generated, mark you, by human thought and feeling, have only entered the affairs of individuals or nations through lack of control in the emotions in everyone's daily personal experience. Even destructive thoughts cannot express themselves as action, events, or become physical things except by passing through the world of feeling. For it is in this phase of manifestation that the activity of coalescing the physical atom upon thought forms takes place. As the noise from a sudden explosion shocks the nervous system of one who hears it, setting up a trembling sensation in the cellular structure of the body, in exactly the same way do the flares of irritated feeling shock, disturb, and disarrange the finer substance and the atomic structure of the mind, body, and world of the person who sends them out, consciously or unconsciously, intentionally or unintentionally. Discordant feeling is the producer of conditions we call disintegration, old age, lack of memory, and every other failure in the world of human experience. The effect upon the body structure is the same as that produced upon a building if the mortar holding the bricks together were to receive repeated shocks, and each day those were to be increased. This continued shock would shake apart the particles composing the mortar. The building would collapse into a chaotic mass, and the form be no more. That is what mankind is constantly doing to the atomic structure of the human body. To give expression to the discordant thoughts and feelings in one's self is the course of least resistance and the habitual activity of the undeveloped, undisciplined, and willful individual who refuses to understand the law of his own being. And to bring the personal self, which is but his instrument of expression, into obedience to that law. He who cannot or will not control his thoughts and feelings is in a bad way, for every door of his consciousness is wide open to to the disintegrating activities thrown off by the minds and emotions of other personalities. It takes neither strength, wisdom, nor training to give way to unkind destructive impulses, and the full-grown human beings who do this are but children in their development of self-control. It is a blight upon the life of mankind that so little control of the emotions is taught humanity from the cradle to the grave. Attention to this particular point is the greatest need in the Western world today. It is easy to give way to discordant thoughts, feelings, and activities, because the mass of mankind are submerged, as it were, by environment and association entirely created by themselves. The individual, through his control of the outer consciousness, must make the effort to rise out of this condition by his own free will, in order to transcend these limitations permanently. No one can hope to rid his life and world of misery, discord, and destruction until he leashes his own thought and feeling. In this way, he refuses to let the life flowing through his mind and body become qualified by the discord resulting from every little disturbing occurrence in the world about him. At first, such discipline does require determined, continuous effort, for the thoughts and feelings of 95% of humanity run as uncontrolled and free as a little tramp dog. However, no matter how much effort it takes to bring these two activities under control, it is worth any amount of time, energy, and effort, and no real, permanent dominion of one's life and world can take place without it. It will be my pleasure and privilege to teach you the use of these higher laws. Their application and use will enable you to release true wisdom and bring about all perfection. The first step to the control of yourself is the stilling of all outer activity of both mind and body. 15 to 30 minutes at night before retiring, and in the morning before beginning the day's work, using the following exercise will do wonders for anyone who will make the necessary effort. For the second step, make certain of being undisturbed, and after becoming very still, picture and feel your body enveloped in a dazzling white light. The first 5 minutes while holding this picture, recognize and feel intensely the connection between the outer self and your great, mighty God within, focusing your attention upon the heart center and visualizing it as a golden sun. The next step is the acknowledgement, "I now joyously accept the fullness of the mighty God presence, the pure Christ." Feel the great brilliancy of the light, and intensify it in every cell of your body for at least 10 minutes longer. Then close the meditation by the command, "I am a child of the light. I love the light. I serve the light. I live in the light. I am protected, illumined, supplied, sustained by the light. And I bless the light." Remember always, one becomes that upon which he meditates. And since all things have come forth from the light, light is the supreme perfection and control of all things. Contemplation and adoration of the light compels illumination to take place in the mind, health, strength, and order to come into the body, and peace, harmony, and success to manifest in the affairs of every individual who will really do it and seeks to maintain it. All the way down the centuries, in every age, under every condition, we are told by all who have expressed the greater accomplishments of life that the light is supreme. The light is everywhere, and in the light exist all things. That truth is just as true today as it was 1,000,000 years ago. As far back as there is any record of humanity, The wise and great ones of all ages are portrayed with a radiation of light about them, emanating from the head and body of each. This light is real, just as real as the electric lights in your homes. The day is not far distant when machines will be constructed to reveal the emanations of light about every individual, to the physical sight of anyone who cares to observe it. Such a machine will also show the contamination or discoloration that becomes a cloud around the light of God, which the personal self generates through discordant thought and feeling. This, and this only, is the way by which the energy of the great life stream is misused and wrongly qualified. If you will practice this exercise faithfully and feel it in every atom of your mind and body, with deep, deep intensity, you will receive abundant proof of the tremendous activity, power, and perfection that abides and is forever active within the light. When you have experienced this for even a short time, you will need no further proof. You become your own proof. The light is the kingdom. Enter into it and be at peace. Return to the Father's house. After the first 10 days of using this exercise, it is well to do it 3 times a day, morning, noon, and night. We often hear the complaint, "Oh, I cannot give all that time." To any who are of that opinion, I wish to say simply this. The time the average person spends in criticizing, condemning, and blaming people, conditions, and things for not being something other than they are, if occupied with this recognition and use of the light, will make heaven manifest on earth for the individual who dares to try and has determination enough to maintain it. Nothing is impossible. The light never fails. The light is God's way of creating and maintaining order, peace, and perfection throughout His creation. Every human being on this earth can have all the time he wants in which to do this, when his desire to do it is intense enough. The intensity in the desire itself will reorder the world of people, conditions, and things so as to provide that time if he earnestly wished to use it for his upward climb. No person in the world is an exception to that law. For the intense desire to do anything constructive, when it becomes intense enough, is the God power that releases the energy necessary to create and express the thing desired. Everyone has the same supreme privilege of contact with the all-powerful presence of God, and it is the only power that ever did, does now, or ever will raise the personal self and its world above earthly discord and limitation. My beloved son, try this with great determination, and know God in you is your certain victory. As his discourse ended, I began to realize that he must be one of the ascended masters, for he had not only given me proof of his dominion over the elements by precipitation, but had instructed and explained as he did it. I sat wondering how it was that he knew me. "My son," he said, answering my thought at once, "I have known you for aeons. In raising your thought by your own conscious effort, it made my coming to you possible at this time. While I have always been in touch with you, when we were both in our finer bodies, your conscious effort of reaching out to someone of the ascended masters opened the way for me to come to you in a much more tangible way, that is, tangible to your physical senses. I see you do not quite recognize me in your outer consciousness. I was present during your birth, at your mother's passing, and was instrumental in bringing you and Lotus together at the right time, that your attainment might not be delayed. Again, I assisted in bringing you and your son into association in this embodiment. However, be patient. Sit still a few moments. Watch me closely, and I will reveal my identity to you. I did as he requested, and in perhaps a full minute, I saw his face, body, and clothing become the living, breathing, tangible presence of the Master Saint Germain. Smiling at my astonishment and enjoying my surprise, he stood there before me, a magnificent godlike figure, in a white jeweled robe, a light and love sparkling in his eyes that revealed and proved the dominion and mastery that are his. This, he explained, is the body in which I work a great deal of the time when occupied with the welfare of mankind, unless the work I am doing at the moment requires closer contact with the outer world of affairs, and in that case I make my body take on the characteristics and dress of the nation with which I am working at the moment. Oh, I exclaimed, now I know you, for I have seen you many times like that, at the inner levels of consciousness. My son, he explained, do you not see what real mastery actually is? We, in the ascended state, can control the atomic structure of our world as a potter controls his clay. Every electron and atom in the universe is obedient to our desire and command, because of the God power by which we control it, and of which we have earned the right to be the directors. Mankind in the unascended state marvels at these things, but I tell you, it is no more effort for us to change the appearance and activity of our bodies than it is for the ordinary human being to change his clothes. The unfortunate condition in human consciousness that keeps individuals in their self-created limitations is their attitude of mind, which either fears or ridicules what it does not understand, or what is still worse, in its ignorance says that is impossible. A thing may not be probable under certain human conditions, but the God Self, which is the Great Light, can change all human conditions, so nothing is impossible. Every individual has the divine flame of life within him, and that God Self of him has dominion wherever he moves in the universe. If he, because of his own mental inertia, will not exert the necessary effort to reorder his age-old habits of mind and body, he goes on bound by the chains of his own forging. But if he chooses to know the God within himself, and dares to give that God Self all control of his outer activities, he will receive the knowledge once more of his dominion over all substance, which has been his from the beginning. The time has arrived when many of humanity are rapidly awakening, and they must in some way be made to understand that they have lived again and again in hundreds, sometimes thousands, of lives, each time in a new physical body. The law of re-embodiment is the activity in human growth that gives the individual an opportunity to re-establish a balance in conditions that he has consciously caused to be thrown out of balance. It is but one activity of the law of compensation, cause and effect, or what might be called an automatic balancing process governing all forces everywhere in the universe. The right understanding of this law gives one the explanation of many conditions in human experience, which otherwise seem wholly unjust. It is the only logical explanation for the infinite complexities and experiences of human creation, and reveals the operation and the law upon which all manifestation rests. It makes one know that there is no such thing as chance or accident. All is under direct, exact, and perfect law. Every experience of consciousness has a former cause, and everything at the same instant is the cause of a future effect. If a man has injured a woman in one life, he is certain to be reincarnated in a feminine form and pass through a similar experience until he realizes and experiences that which he has caused another to endure. The same thing is true if a woman be unjust or injures a man. This is the only way by which one is compelled, or rather compels himself, to experience both the cause and effect of everything which he generates in the world. The individual can create and experience whatsoever he will in his own world, but if he choose to do that which causes others to experience discord, then he compels himself to go through a similar condition until he understands what the effect of his own creation is upon the rest of the life of the universe. Come with me, and let us review the physical life in which you used a feminine form in France, wherein you were a singer of splendid accomplishment, with a voice of rare beauty and power. Immediately, without the least effort on my part, I stood outside my physical body, seeing it clearly as it reposed upon the ground. I wondered if it would be safe there on the mountainside, and in answer to my thoughts, Saint Germain replied, "Do not be disturbed. Not a thing in the world can harm your body while we are away. Observe." Instantly, I saw it surrounded by a white flame, forming a circle about 50 feet in diameter. Placed his right arm around me, and I saw we were rising rapidly from the ground. But I soon became adjusted to his vibratory action. There was no definite feeling of motion through space. But presently, we looked down upon a village in the south of France. And he continued, "Here you were born as an only child, the daughter of a beautiful woman, whose life was an example of idealism far in advance of the majority in that period. Your father was a devoted husband and companion, highly cultured, and inspired by the early Christian spirit. The atmospheric ether of every environment records all that has ever transpired in that locality. I will revivify these etheric records, and you shall see living pictures giving every detail of your life. You sang at the church of this village and studied with a teacher who persuaded your parents to let her give you training. You made rapid progress and then received still greater advantages when they moved to Paris. After a year of intensive study, an opportunity came to sing before the Queen of France, and through her patronage, you had appearances at many of her salons. This assured you a successful musical career. France and success lavished their gifts upon you for the next 5 years, and you accumulated much wealth. Suddenly, both parents passed through the change called death, and the shock to you was very great, followed by many weeks of serious illness. When you recovered and returned again to concert work, a new sympathetic quality had come into your voice through the recent experience of grief. A man who had guided much of your musical study became director of your public work, and you came to depend upon him as one who seemed worthy of trust. Then followed 14 years of brilliant success, at the end of which you became suddenly ill and passed on within a week. Your jewels and wealth were left in care of the director, to be used to help others, and to fulfill certain plans for which you had worked all your life. The last rites were no sooner over than a complete change took place within him. Greed took possession entirely. Now I shall show you that man whom you met some years ago here in America in your present life. The incident in business, I am quite sure you will remember clearly." Here he showed me a business association in which I had tried to help several people while in the West some 10 years previously in connection with a representative from the Belgian government. That man, he continued, was given a chance here to right the wrong he did you in France. He was shown the condition and knew full well the situation, for we showed it to him. But he was not yet strong enough to permit the working out of the great cosmic law of justice and balance that debt. If he had done so of his own volition, it would have given him freedom in many ways and enabled him to have progressed much more rapidly in this embodiment. Thus does the outer life keep the individual bound to the wheel of necessity, rebirth, continued struggle, and pain, until we let the light of the Christ within illumine and purify us, that we may respond only to the plan of God, love, peace, and perfection for his creation. This is the kind of lesson one never forgets, because objective teaching records the experience in the vision as well as in the mind. The record in the sight is deeper and necessarily receives more attention from the outer activity of the intellect. The essence of that long-forgotten experience certainly fixed itself in my memory permanently, for I can recall every detail of it to this day as clearly as when I observed it with him. Now, he went on, let us recall another of your embodiments, one that you had in Egypt. We rose from the earth and moved rapidly forward. I was very conscious of the Mediterranean as we passed over its beautiful waters. We went on to Karnak and Luxor, then came again into contact with the earth. Watch closely, he said. This record is of a very ancient temple in Luxor, not among those whose ruins the archaeologists are exploring today, but one antedating any that have been discovered so far. If they knew where to look, they would find magnificent temples in a state of almost perfect preservation, indicating a certain spot filled with ruins, which is all that travelers can see today. The scene became replaced by the activity in the ether, as it had originally been in all its beauty and splendor, far more magnificent than anything of which the present generation has any concept. The gardens and pools were surrounded by great pillars of white marble and rose granite. The entire locality became living, real, vibrant, and just as tangible as any physical city on earth today. It was so perfectly natural and normal that I asked how he made these experiences so vivid. Man and his creations, he replied, as well as nature, have an etheric counterpart, a pattern which makes its eternal impression upon the atmosphere about him wherever he goes. The pattern of the individual's activity and life experience is within his own aura all the time. A similar record exists in the aura of every locality. An ascended master may, if he choose, revivify or reclothe the individual's record of former activities wherever that person happens to be, for the pattern upon which the master coalesces the atomic structure is always in the aura of that individual. When the master reclothes the record of a locality, he must do it in the same specific place, for such a record, when reclothed, becomes the same living form and structure that it was when first built in physical substance. In this way, it is possible to coalesce again the physical structure of entire buildings and their surroundings when the ascended master so desires for the accomplishment of some good purpose. When one has attained this God-given dominion, he can and does reclothe and reanimate any etheric record he desires to make visible for the instruction and benefit of students and others. When he does this, it is as real as reality itself, and the reclothed objects can be photographed, handled, and made physically tangible to the physical senses of the one observing them. Notice, he reminded me, you are experiencing these activities in your finer body. But they are nonetheless real because of that. For your physical body is only a garment which you, the self-conscious thinking and experiencing individual, wear. It is the same as though you wore a heavy overcoat in the cold winter atmosphere and only a light suit of clothes on a very warm summer day. Experiences in your light suit of clothes would surely be no less real than those you lived through in your heavy overcoat. I call this to your attention that you may understand the fuller and less limited activities of life. We examine the grounds and surrounding country and architecture. "Come, let us enter," he said, and as he spoke, stepped forward and passed through the main entrance into the temple itself. We then became living actors and at the same time observers of the following experience. We passed into the main part of the temple and proceeded toward the inner sanctuary. The high priest came directly up to us and seemed to know me. "This priest of ancient days," Saint Germain explained, "is now your son." A lesser priest appeared, whom I immediately felt I knew, and he remarked, "The assisting priest was yourself." We entered the inner sanctuary and saw the Vestal Virgin guarding the sacred fire. She, whom I now beheld, was Lotus, my beloved twin ray, whom I met and married some years ago, and who is the mother of our son. The scene changed, and we saw a visiting prince from a distant province plan to seize the Vestal Virgin for his bride. All seemed to go well until the high priest was shown a vision of what was about to take place. It disturbed him, but he kept his own counsel. Standing guard as the slaves of the prince entered, he watched them approach the sanctuary. As they came nearer, he stepped forward and spoke but one word that meant stop. One slave, bolder than the rest, came on. The higher priest warned him back, but still he came nearer. When he reached a certain sacred circle of force which emanated from the altar, the priest no longer hesitated. He stepped to the outer edge of that protecting radiance, raised his right hand, and pointed directly at the slave. A flash of flame shot forth like lightning, and the slave fell lifeless to the floor. The prince, who was watching, came forward in an insane rage. "Stop!" commanded the priest again in a voice like a clap of thunder. The prince hesitated for a moment, stunned by the very power of the word, and the priest continued, "Listen to me. You shall not desecrate the highest of God's gifts to the temple of life. Begone, before you follow the example of your too brazen and misdirected slave." The high priest was fully conscious of the power he could wield as he stood watching the prince. He was the very embodiment of self-control, of illimitable force, consciously held in obedience to his will. He was majesty, crowned with eternal power. The will of the prince was powerful also, but he had no control over himself, and as another wave of blind rage swept over him, when he found himself again opposed, and giving full vent to lust, he rushed forward. The priest, quick as a flash, raised his hand. A flame flashed out a second time, and the prince followed the fate of his former slave. Saint Germain turned to me and explained the experience still further. "You see," he began, "this is the way the quality within every force reacts upon the one who sends it out. The prince and his slave came with the qualities of hate, selfishness, and depravity within their feelings, and when the priest directed the force of which he was the master toward them, it took on their qualities the moment it touched their auras. He merely turned their own feelings and selfishness back upon themselves. The priest, in his unselfish effort to protect another, was himself also protected." That incident closed. The scene of splendor vanished, and again we stood amidst the temple ruins. Saint Germain revealed still more to me, which may not be recorded here. There is only one way, he went on, to avoid the cosmic wheel of cause and effect, the necessity for re-embodiment, and that is through the conscious effort to comprehend the law of life. One must earnestly seek the God within, make permanent conscious contact with that inner self, and hold firmly to it in the face of every condition in the outer life. It will be my pleasure and privilege to show you more, but only for the instruction it will bring to yourself and others. Come, we must now return. As we came near my body, he instructed again. Watch the circle of white flame disappear. I looked. It vanished. A moment later, I was back in my body. The sun was sinking, and I knew it would be nearly midnight by the time we arrived home. Place your arm about my shoulder, said Saint Germain, and close your eyes. I felt my body lifted from the ground, but I was not particularly conscious of moving forward. Presently, my feet touched the floor, and opening my eyes, I stood in the lodge. Saint Germain was greatly amused when I asked how it was that we could come back in this manner without attracting the attention of the people about us, and he answered, "We many times draw about our bodies the cloak of invisibility when moving among those in physical form," and the next second he was gone. I had heard of the great ascended masters who could take their bodies with them wherever they go and manifest or bring into visibility anything they desire to use direct from the universal. However, to experience actual contact with one of them was a very different thing, and I tried to realize in full the marvel of the experience. To Saint Germain it was evidently a most ordinary occurrence. I sat in quiet contemplation for a long time, in deep, deep gratitude, trying to comprehend and to fully realize his explanation of the law concerning desire. He emphasized its importance and activity as a motive power in the universe, to propel forward new ideas, compelling an expansion of consciousness to take place within the life of every individual. He had explained it by saying, "Constructive desire is the expanding activity within life, for it is only in this way that greater and greater ideas, activity, and accomplishment are pushed through into expression in the outer world of substance and form. Within every right desire is the power of its fulfillment. Man is the Son of God. He is commanded by the Father to choose how he shall direct the life energy and what quality he wishes his fulfilled desire to express. This he must do, for free will is his birthright. It is the function of the outer activity of the intellect to guide all expansion into constructive channels. This is the purpose and duty of the outer self, to allow the great life or God energy to be used only for the gratification of sense desires, the habit of the mass of mankind, is its destructive use and is always, without any exception, followed by inharmony, weakness, failure, and destruction. The constructive use of desire is the conscious direction of this limitless God energy by wisdom. All desire, directed by wisdom, carries some kind of blessing to the rest of creation. All desire, directed by the God within, goes forth with the feeling of love and blesses always. The next few days I spent writing this record of my experiences. Then one morning, on awakening, I found a golden card lying on the table near my couch. It looked like a piece of metallic gold, and on it, in beautiful shaded script of a lovely violet color, was just one short sentence. Be at our trysting place on the mountain at 7 in the morning. Signed, Saint Germain. I put this card away carefully, and could scarcely wait the intervening time, so great was my expectancy. Early the next morning, while preparing a lunch, there came a distinct impulse not to take anything with me. I obeyed, and decided to trust that my needs would be supplied directly from the universal. Light of heart, I was soon on my way, determined not to miss any opportunity to ask questions, if permitted. As I approached the appointed place, my body became lighter and lighter, until by the time I was within a quarter of a mile, my feet scarcely touched the ground. There was no one in sight, so I sat down on a log to wait for Saint Germain, feeling no fatigue whatsoever, although my hike had been about 10 miles. As I contemplated the wonderful privilege and blessing that had come to me, I heard a twig crack and looked around expecting to see him. Imagine my surprise when not 50 feet away I saw a panther slowly approaching. My hair must have stood on end. I wanted to run, to scream, anything. So frantic was the feeling of fear within me. Would have been useless to move, for one spring from the panther would have been fatal to me. My brain whirled, so great was my fear. But one idea came through clearly and held my attention steady. I realized that I had the mighty presence of God right within me, and that this presence was all love. This beautiful animal was a part of God's life also, and I made myself look at it directly in the eyes. Then came the thought that one part of God could not harm another part. I was conscious of this fact only. A feeling of love swept over me and went out like a ray of light directed to the panther, and with it went my fear. The stealthy tread ceased, and I moved slowly toward it, feeling that God's love filled us both. The vicious glare in the eyes softened, the animal straightened up, and came slowly to me, rubbing its shoulder against my leg. I reached down and stroked the soft head. It looked up into my eyes for a moment, and then lay down and rolled over like a playful kitten. The fur was a beautiful, dark, reddish-brown. The body long, supple, and of great strength. I continued to play with it, and when I suddenly looked up, Saint Germain stood beside me. "My son," he said, "I saw the great strength within you, or I would not have permitted so great a test. You have conquered fear. My congratulations. Had you not conquered the outer self, I would not have allowed the panther to harm you, but our association would have ceased for a time." I did not have anything to do with the panther being there. It was part of the inner operation of the great law. As you will see before the association with your newfound friend ceases. Now that you have passed the test of courage, it is possible for me to give much greater assistance. Each day, you will become stronger, happier, and express much greater freedom. He held out his hand, and in a moment there appeared 4 little cakes of a beautiful golden brown, each about 2 inches square. He offered these, and I ate them at his direction. They were most delicious. Immediately, I felt a quickening, tingling sensation through my entire body, a new sense of health and clearness of mind. Saint Germain seated himself beside me, and my instruction began.